I'm speaking on the phone tonight with music historian, journalist, and producer Larry Nager, who's down in Nashville. Welcome back to Around Cincinnati, Larry.
Good to be back around Cincinnati.
Well, you're coming back to Cincinnati for a lecture May 21st at the Downtown Public Library to talk about bluegrass and its early venues here in southwestern Ohio. Being a bluegrass musician, I imagine you may have played in some of the venues which might still remain.
The thing that kind of sets this apart is this is the bars of the 50s and the 60s we'll be talking about. So it's the really early years of it before the revival. And there were maybe a few urban-type college kids in the clubs, but virtually none. And for the most part, they were absent completely. So to get the information, you've kind of got to go back to the musicians who were there. And fortunately, we've got a bunch of them. I did a wonderful interview with Bobby Osborne. And, of course, playing with Red Allen over the years, he would tell stories about the club scene. But Larry Sparks came up in those, a bunch of different musicians. Of course, Jimmy Martin was, the scene was really vital. I always talk about that I-75 corridor as the Highway 61 of bluegrass, with the Appalachians, the Kentuckians, Tennesseans, white Southerners came up along with black Southerners. And that through this corridor, particularly coming up across into Cincinnati, on up into Hamilton, Middletown, Dayton, in that area. And then following it along, the ultimate destination would be Detroit, or you know, maybe a left turn and hit Chicago. But it was such a vital era. And the musicians, you know, bluegrass at that point wasn't called bluegrass. It was just this sort of alternative to country music, but it had that drive, that newness, and that banjo. And the displaced Appalachians would sing me back home. You know, they on the weekends, if they couldn't make it, you know, drive down home, they would go out to the local beer joint, and no cover charges, obviously. You know, they might make money in tips for the bands if they wanted to play the country songs of the day, but they were rough places. I heard some amazing stories we'll be sharing on the 21st, but in fact, I heard a new Red Allen story from Bobby that's pretty amazing that I'll just tease that, but they're a different breed of human back in those days. Those were rough clubs.
Is Vernon McIntyre one of the folks that you'll talk to?
I'm hoping to speak with him this week. Yeah, Vernon's a big part of that. That's true.
How about naming some of the venues? Were some of them in Hamilton, Middletown, maybe Springfield?
There's the Circle Bar, was a big one, the Ring Bar. Bobby, the early Osborne Brothers stuff, it was the Crestwood Restaurant. Cincinnati, the Ken Mill, obviously. The thing is, it's like there's a definite defining line between the revival bars and the original places. And those were pretty much off everybody's radar. You're lucky if you get a snapshot. There's a photo of Frank Wakefield and Noah Kreese at the Circle Bar. And there's just not much existing photos because, you know, people were there to drink cheap. It's like It's a Wonderful Life line when Jimmy Stewart's in the bar and says, you know, we serve hard drinks for men who want to get drunk fast. Sheldon Leonard says, you know, behind the bar. And that's pretty much what those were like. It was just a place for guys who work in the factory and needed to blow off steam. And every night ended in a fight, a lot of times, including the musicians on stage. And they were rough clubs, but they were, you know, they came and they went. By the time that, like, an Aunt Maudie's came around, which was my introduction to Cincinnati, I first really kind of came down to Cincinnati to play Aunt Maudie's back around 74, 75. And that was my introduction to Main Street and Cincinnati in general. So it's that club scene. At the time, we're talking about the 50s and 60s, there was no IBMA. There was no Bluegrass Unlimited. It was like a small circle of people in every community. Most, you know, there were no touring bands. It was mostly like a house band would have the gig, and you'd play. And that was the school of music. That was the one thing they all agreed on. It was tough, but that's how you learn how to play. Bobby Osborne was saying, you know, that's how we learned to play the mandolin, because you got a bunch of drunks out there. They don't care. Just make a bunch of noise, and they're happy, and you really learned how to do the music there. And the results speak for themselves. I mean, Ohio is an incredible source of great bluegrass down through time, whether it was the stuff that, you know, King Records provided a place for them to record. And, of course, money conscious, they wouldn't just come to record. They would come to play. So they might play different clubs in the area. You might see, like, Reno and Smiley playing, or the Stanley Brothers would do local gigs. Ralph Stanley was telling me he met his wife at the Ken Mill playing in town when they were doing some recording sessions. So the deeper you dig into bluegrass in the Cincinnati, southwestern Ohio, Cincinnati on up to Dayton, it was such a rich breeding ground for the music and people who are still, you know, very much with us. So Doyle Austin played the clubs when he was with Jimmy Martin. And you had Larry Sparks definitely came up there. And it was a place you graduated from. I mean, I think a few of them just all talk in those terms. I mean, you played the bars to learn your craft and make a little money. And as soon as you could, you got on the radio or you started recording and you started trying to travel. But traveling back then, there wasn't an industry. You know, everything was you make do. Some promoter would hire you. He might or might not pay you. I mean, it was the businesses we see today is unimaginable compared to the way it was when it began. It was such a small level thing. It was just almost like a club of people that went out to hear the music, learn the music, and the musicians that played it took it a little seriously, a little more seriously than the audience, and were able to take it. And in the case of the Osbournes, you know, take it to the Grand Ole Opry. In the case of, you know, people like Larry Sparks and Red Allen, into the Bluegrass Hall of Fame. But, you know, that's southwestern Ohio, because of the industry that came up and the large Appalachian population it drew, Ohio's place in bluegrass is, it, you cannot overestimate it. That combination of that population as an audience and the technology we had, thanks to WLW, which created a community of engineers, people who had played around with the new fangled disc cutting machines and the new wire recorders, and then on into the tape recorders, the creation of studios like Whitey Herzog's, which has been getting, you know, such great notice up there in the last few years. Obviously, King Records and that influence. So that odd combination of technology on one hand and just those raw shot-in-a-beer bars near the factories, you get your paycheck cashed at the bar and blow off some steam on a Friday, Saturday night.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great presentation. While you're on the phone, I wanted to just talk briefly about this big project that you're working on in Cuba.
There's an old Manassas song, if you remember Stephen Stills' band he had with Chris Hillman. It's called Cuban Bluegrass. That's been kind of my life for the last few months here, because working on both projects. But the Cuban project, I'd gone down there in 2004 with Tony Ellis, a familiar name and certainly a wonderful musician to a lot of people around Cincinnati. And we played for the State Department. So I'd gotten that experience there, spent a week there at a time when very few people were going down there, and got to know some musicians down there, because the State Department arranged like some gatherings and jam sessions with Cuban musicians. So a few years later, I was talking to Raul Malo from the Mavericks, whose parents were from Cuba, but he'd never been there. And so he'd always wanted to go back. Then some friends of mine, I work with at Bluegrass Underground, Todd Gerald and Todd Mayo, were talking about doing a Cuban project. And I told them about Raul and what a great host he would be for this. And it's, you know, an emotional journey as well as a physical one and historic one for him. So we started developing a program on that. I wrote the script and the treatment for it. And we put together a plan. We went down there on a scouting mission, found an incredible venue at a 100-year-old beer garden. And the Mavericks were signed on. We got some wonderful Cuban musicians, Eliotis Ochoa, people are familiar with from Buena Vista Social Club. Some other great players, Roberto Fonseca, Afro-Cuban jazz pianist, ready to be a superstar, absolutely. A great young band, the Sweet Lizzy Project, and some other folks. It was the coolest thing I've ever done. Cuba's an amazing place and amazingly frustrating at the same time. But it's going to air on great performances this fall, and it's called Havana Time Machine. Because you do feel, sometimes you feel like you're in the future, and sometimes you feel like you are way in the past. Often in the next, within the same 5 minutes. So it's an amazing country. Anyone who can visit, I think, should. Everybody wants to go down there before it changes, but I will tell them it is not going to change quickly. The Cubans themselves want to keep things the way it is. The government is very slow to change, and there's good things and bad things in that. But it's an amazing place, and I can't believe the stuff we were able to capture on film. We had really good people, Jim Yockey, who directs the Bluegrass Underground shows. When we won 15 regional Emmys on that, was the director of the concert, or Randy Hale, the director of the documentary aspect. I was heavily involved in the documentary part of it with the musicians and traveling around Cuba. We go to Ernest Hemingway's farm, Finca Ligia, Lookout Farm, where he thought he would leave for a few weeks and then come back after that revolution thing blew over, and he never returned to it. And so I got to handle Ernest Hemingway's record collection, which was pretty cool.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. We had an amazing trip, and we got some great footage. So we're really excited about that this fall.
Well, we'll have to have you back this fall to closer to air date to talk about it some more.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to come back up there and see some old friends and talk about bluegrass. Because that's, I mean, like I say, I lived in Cincinnati longer than any other city. I worked at both newspapers, but the thing that got me was playing bluegrass at Aunt Maudie's and then playing with Katie Lauer. and then Red Allen and Harley Allen, the Allen brothers. I love the Ohio bluegrass, and so we'll talk about how it got started, because basically the clubs is what created the scene. We had the recording studios that made amazing records, the Latin Scruggs Mercury recordings, all those great King records we've talked about so much. But the thing that created the scene was these just like corner bars, you know, some neon lights, a jukebox, cigarette machine, and something that looked like a stage, and you could stick a band up there. And that's what created the scene we have today. The festivals and everything came later. It was those bars that were ground zero for Southwest Ohio bluegrass.
Larry, thanks for talking with us tonight, and we'll see you when you get back into town May 21st.
Always love talking to you, Leah. I look forward to seeing you.
Larry Nigger will be speaking about the early venues featuring bluegrass performances in southwestern Ohio on Sunday, May 21st at 2 p.m. in the main branch of the public library in downtown Cincinnati. There's a lecture following his at the library on the topic Amateur Bluegrass Gatherings as Cultural Expressions of Community. An exhibit on local bluegrass history is also on display at the main library through August 10th. So if you're a bluegrass fan, this would be a fun way to learn about its history in the area. Plus, after this lecture from 6 to 9 p.m. May 21st at Motor Pub on Main Street, you might want to attend a free bluegrass jam with Katie Lauer and Jim Tarbell. For a link to these events, please visit wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Lee Hay.